from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Raquel Maria Dillon.
We begin in San Diego, where Congressman Duncan Hunter's defense in the corruption case against him is about to get a lot more complicated. This morning, his wife, Margaret, is expected to change her plea in the federal criminal case brought against them both. Last year, Margaret Hunter joined her husband in pleading not guilty to spending $250,000 of campaign funds on personal expenses like vacations, tequila shots, and theater tickets. Here's what Congressman Hunter told Fox News when the charges were filed.
She was also the campaign manager. So whatever she did on that, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure. But I didn't do it.
Reporter Matt Hoffman from our partner station KPBS in San Diego will be in court this morning. He joins me now. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Lily.
Matt, why don't we begin with what you're learning about why Margaret Hunter seems ready to change her plea from not guilty?
Yeah, so we know today there is a change of plea hearing scheduled for this morning. Now, I talked to a former U.S. attorney who says theoretically she would be pleading guilty today. Her original plea was not guilty. She could also be pleading no contest, but that's probably unlikely. Now, the former federal prosecutor told me if her plea is guilty, there's a good chance that Margaret has struck a deal with prosecutors and is working and cooperating with them in this case. Now, we'll find out for sure today in court. If there is a guilty plea issued, the judge will ask the government if there's any promises made in the plea, which could include a cooperation agreement.
So it sounds like Margaret Hunter may well be working with the government now. Have you heard anything from either Mr. or Mrs. Hunter's camp?
Yeah, so Margaret Hunter's attorneys, they did not comment on the news that came out yesterday regarding this change of plea hearing. They did say, though, that they would be commenting after the hearing today outside of the courthouse. An attorney for Duncan Hunter, though, he did issue a statement saying that they are aware of Ms. Hunter scheduling a hearing to change her plea, but at this time it does not change anything regarding Congressman Hunter, and there are still significant motions that need to be litigated.
So what are legal experts saying about what Mrs. Hunter's cooperation means for Congressman Hunter?
Right. So this former federal prosecutor that I talked to, he said that if Margaret is cooperating, she could potentially be going to testify against her husband. Remember, when this indictment came down, it was 48 pages, had a number of allegations of misspending campaign funds for both Duncan Hunter and Margaret Hunter. If she is working with the government, it could be used to build almost an airtight case against her husband, Duncan Hunter, although he has in the past denied all these allegations.
Matt Hoffman is a reporter at KPBS. He will be at the courthouse later this morning watching this proceeding go down. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Lily.
Meanwhile, immigrant advocates in California slammed the Trump administration's pick to head the federal agency that manages legal immigration. But it's not just advocacy groups that are troubled. KQED's Farida Javala-Romero reports.
Former Virginia Attorney General Kenneth Cuccinelli started running U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services this week. Known as an immigration hardliner, Cuccinelli has supported denying citizenship to U.S.-born children of undocumented people and making local police check immigration status during stops.
I just fear for the immigration benefits moving forward.
Daniel Spooner oversees the USCIS Employee Union and believes it'll become more difficult for immigrants to get visas, green cards, and citizenship. But Jessica Vaughn with the right-leaning Center for Immigration Studies says she's hopeful.
Mr. Cuccinelli is going to see himself as part of the president's immigration team addressing the problem at the border. And this is going to include needed improvements to the asylum system.
Meaning cracking down on people she says are gaming that system. Some Republican senators oppose Cuccinelli's confirmation, but the Trump administration may have found a way to avoid that requirement by calling him principal deputy instead of acting director. For the California Report, I'm Farida Javala-Romero.
In other immigration news, the San Ysidro Port of Entry in San Diego is California's ground zero for the bottleneck of asylum seekers trying to make it to the United States. KQED's Alex Hall has this inside look at the place where asylum seekers are held, down several flights of stairs and out of view from where most people cross the U.S.-Mexico border.
We are now entering the pedestrian building.
On a busy Friday morning, San Ysidro's port director Sydney Aki shows reporters the pedestrian crossing. Here, travelers stand in line for a Customs and Border Protection officer to check their documents.
Good morning.
More than 75,000 people cross here every day from Mexico to the U.S., but that's not the port's only traffic. In another wing of the building, men and women from Africa, the Caribbean, and Central America stand single file in silence, hands behind their backs. A few women hold small children.
This is part of our morning intake for today, so asylum seekers.
When people come to the border to ask for asylum, they usually have to wait their turn in Tijuana for weeks or months. The migrants here today will finally get their chance to explain to the U.S. government why they're afraid to return to their countries. Then they'll wait for a new date to appear in immigration court.
So if you guys could drop any phones, cameras, recording equipment.
A border officer tells us that journalists are not allowed to record where we're going next, down into the basement.
Backpacks, so just only pen and pad can go.
You can't hear this part, but we descend a stairway and enter an area called the Admissibility Enforcement Unit. This is where the migrants are taken next. Inside holding cells, much like a jail, they sit on metal benches or use a toilet behind a waist-high divider. They're given aluminum blankets and thin sleeping mats. CBP standards say that detainees should not be held here for longer than 72 hours, but officials acknowledge that limit is often exceeded. Before visiting the port, I talked to people who were recently detained here. Carmen Lobo from El Salvador is one migrant who said medical attention in the facility was delayed.
Me pegó dolor de mi vientre, dolor de mi espalda.
Lobo says that one day in March, she started vomiting and felt pain in her abdomen and back, so she asked to see a doctor. Hours later, she was examined and told she was having symptoms of a miscarriage. That was around 7 p.m. The ambulance arrived at midnight, she says.
Tenía mi pantalón bien manchado, como de sangre.
She says when she returned from the hospital, her pants were stained with blood. The next day, she says, she was sent back to Mexico. Other migrants reported officers pressured them to sign documents and that at times officers denied food or used physical force against migrants. After the tour, I talked to Port Director Sydney Aki. He says Customs and Border Protection only takes in a certain number of asylum seekers each day so that conditions and care are not compromised.
If we overload individuals into our custody, there is a somewhat decrease in care. Individuals may not get the proper checks for medical care, may not get fed in a timely manner.
When asked about the allegations, a spokeswoman said CBP strongly disagrees with the reports and investigates all formal complaints. She said that the agency treats those in its custody with dignity and respect and provides multiple avenues to report any misconduct. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall at the San Ysidro Port of Entry.
Now to the latest in the college admissions scandal. The former sailing coach at Stanford has gotten out of serving prison time for his role. KQED's Julia McAvoy reports on his sentencing yesterday.
Prosecutors wanted John Vandermore to serve over a year in prison to send a message to people considering cheating the college admissions system. Vandermore admitted to accepting over $600,000 in bribes as part of an attempt to get students enrolled at Stanford. He didn't pocket the money himself. Instead, he diverted it to the university's sailing program. Because of that, the U.S. District Court judge in Boston sentenced the former coach to one day in prison, deemed already served. Vandermore will pay a $10,000 fine and serve 2 years probation. He's the first to be sentenced in the case, which ensnared Hollywood celebrities and other coaches at some of the country's top schools. For the California Report, I'm Julia McAvoy.
Stanford has retained a company to conduct an external review of the situation. Here in San Francisco, the district attorney is about to start using artificial intelligence to reduce bias when prosecutors decide whether to charge someone with a crime. The new technology will scan police reports and automatically redact race, names, hair and eye color, and locations. It will also remove police officer names so prosecutors won't be influenced by the reputation of certain cops. Here's DA George Gascon.
It will redact the work without redacting
the essence and the quality of the narrative was so important to us, so that we could take a look first and make an initial charging decision based on the facts and the facts alone.
The new tool was developed by the Stanford Computational Policy Lab and is expected to be fully in place by next month. And finally this morning, former Governor Jerry Brown has a new job, and he's going back to his alma mater, UC Berkeley, to launch the California-China Climate Policy Institute. And its goal will be for the two nations to research technology to fight global warming. The Sacramento Bee reports that Brown will be a visiting professor with the College of Natural Resources and the Law School at Cal. Apparently, retirement at the ranch in Colusa County didn't suit Brown all that well. And that's the California Report for this Thursday, June 13th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Raquel Maria Dillon. Have a great day.